What would today's technology look like with Victorian-era design and materials? That's the world steampunk envisions, a mad inventor collection of 21st century-inspired contraptions powered by steam and driven by gears. In their new book, Vintage Tomorrows, futurist Brian David Johnson and cultural historian James Carrot explore steampunk, a cultural movement that's captivated thousands of artists, designers, makers, hackers, and writers throughout the world. The book looks into steampunk's vision of old-world craftsmen making beautiful hand-tooled gadgets and what it says about our age of disposable technology. Brian David Johnson and James Carrot join us on the roundtable this morning. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much. James, let us begin with you of how this project came about and how you started to explore vintage tomorrows.
Sure. To make a long story short, the project itself actually just began with a conversation that Brian and I had over a beer. Historically speaking, a lot of the best ideas in the world happens when people sit down around tables and taverns, and that's kind of what happened in this case. I'm a historian, Brian's a futurist. We've both been working in the technology industry for some time. And we got into a conversation about how people are coping to the increasing digitization of culture. And I'd been watching steampunk as a countercultural movement, but also somebody who's fascinated with history and with dressing up and playing history and getting involved with it for some time. And it just became apparent when we sat down to have a beer in 2010 that we were at the cusp of a moment of some change and that steampunk had something to tell us. And so we launched into a project and started looking into it.
Where does that term come from, steampunk? How long has that been around?
The word itself was coined by a writer named K.W. Jeter in 1987. He was writing into a small science fiction magazine called Locust, and he was writing about the work that he and a couple other writers were doing at the time. Tim Powers was one of them, the guy who wrote the most recent Pirates of the Caribbean movie was based on. So historical fantasy and fiction writers, and they're writing a kind of science fiction that was set in the Victorian era. And so this is around the time cyberpunk was really popular in the mid-1980s. So he made a joke and said, well, you could probably call us steampunks. And that label sort of stuck, and it stuck around in geek culture, in role-playing games, and in a very niche science fiction area for some time. The playing with the past, playing with the Victorian past in us, placing scientific stuff, placing technology in a specific 19th century past has been around since just after World War II. The first steampunk book I've been able to find is a novel by a children's book called by William Payne Dubois called The 21 Balloons. It was published in 1947. But something changed within the past 5 to 7 years, and I think it has a lot to do with the digital revolution and also a lot to do with the space where the imaginers, the people who have been inventing these fantastic historical worlds, met the creators and the people who are actually capable of building these worlds in real life at full scale. I mean, I've driven a 3-story Victorian house through the desert. Few people can say they've done that. And hopefully more will be able to because of things like what groups like the Obtanium Works and other steampunk folks are doing.
So, Brian, I mean, obviously, as a futurist, you look at this and we look forward. So how much of it is cool and how much of it is really practical?
Well, certainly all of it's cool. That's one of the things that really drew me to steampunk. I mean, steampunk is a cultural movement. It's a mix of TV and comics and movies and fashion and music, and that's really what interested me. And when James told me that steampunk was playing around with the past and it was all about technology, that really they weren't anti-technology, they actually loved technology, they were just playing around with it. And I asked him, so if steampunk is playing around with the past, doesn't that mean they want a different future? And that was really the question that changed both of our lives. And what we really began to learn, and for myself, it was very practical as a futurist for a large technology company. It's really my job to understand how our lives and our relationships with technology are changing. And for me, steampunk was this really cool, really elegant, but really deep-rooted reimagining and playing around with people's relationship with technology. You could see people doing it physically, which you don't get to see that very often. And in the research that James and I had done, we really hit on three deep undercurrents of how people's lives were changing and how our relationship with technology was changing. We saw that people wanted their technology to have a sense of humor, that people are funny, and why can't all of these really smartphones and these really great tablets, why can't they be funny as well and make us laugh? We found that people wanted their technology to have a sense of humanity. They wanted it to be made by somebody. They want it to be made ethically by somebody. And they want it to know them. If you have, you know, if your smartphone has more computational power than got us to the moon and back, why doesn't it know me personally? You know, why doesn't it know me as Brian and James as James? There's a sense of humanity and connection that our devices and our technology just doesn't have. And then the final piece was people wanted their technology to have a sense of history. And I think that's really what you begin to see people playing with from a cultural standpoint, is history is really the on-ramp to the future. And everybody we talk to, from the deepest, most ardent steampunk all the way up to Justin Bieber, all said the exact same thing, that these vintage technologies give us a way to understand the future that we're moving into.
We have so much trouble with technology anyway, figuring out where we're going, where we're headed, what it will be, coming to terms with it because it's all moving so fast. Because this has a foot in the past, does that help us understand it a little bit better and come to terms with it?
I think that's exactly the metaphor. I think that's exactly what's going on. Is it steampunk has knobs and gears and hooks hanging off of it. It expects you to play around with it and to personalize it. And that, as a culture, I find really, really fascinating when you look at steampunk, because people really are playing around with this technology, getting an understanding of it. You know, when you spend your day with a smartphone in your pocket, or you sleep with a smartphone next to your bed or even under your pillow, you have a very different expectation of that technology. It's not something that's sitting over there on the desk. It's something that lives with you. And steampunk provides the way to do that.
James?
Pardon me for interrupting.
No,
the
go
history
ahead.
Gives you an anchor as well, just in terms of how to place these things in the story of your life and in the story of the culture that we're a part of. There's an analogy that I use from one of William Gibson's novels, Pattern Recognition. There's a trend hunter character there who's actually not so far different from Brian, who travels around the world looking for what's the next big thing. Of course, Brian does it in technology. This woman does it in the consumer area. But she talks about jet lag and how the experience of jet lag for her feels like she's left her soul behind, that she's so flown so fast that she's outflown her soul and she has to wait for a while for it to catch up. And I think that there's, you know, talking to the people that we've spoken to over the course of the past couple of years, you get this sense that at least in a good part of our culture, there's a sense that our technological abilities have in some ways outstripped our soul, have gone so quickly. We're able to do so much so fast, and it's becoming invisible and digital and beyond the ken of normal people. And we need a way to catch up, and part of the way for us to catch up as a culture is to tell ourselves stories. And steampunk gives us the opportunity to make those stories up, to dig into history, to crack the warranty on your textbook in the same way you're cracking the warranty on your device when you open it up, and to mess around a little bit until things make sense, because they're a part of the stories that we tell ourselves about who we are and who we can be.
When you put the book together, what were you trying? Because it has so many facets to it. And you try to explore as many of those as possible. So ultimately, when you were putting the book together and you were trying to cover this huge topic, how did you ultimately decide to attack it?
well, we'll have to tell you. So we wrote the book. I think,
more beer, I would assume.
Well, I was hoping Brian would start that one.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Go ahead, Brian.
It was lovely. No, it was a lovely experience. We wrote the book about three times. And as you can imagine, when you get a futurist and a historian in the same room, it's very messy. And that's why James and I and our collaboration has been so great, is we don't always agree, and we like to argue. And we've been very well behaved on this phone call, because normally we interrupt each other like men. Originally, we had started, and it was much more kind of a cultural document, and much more scholarly. And then we realized, hey, wait a minute, steampunk is cool, and this is about culture, and this is about a moment in time. And really, it came to me watching James, because James is an embedded historian, so he became a steampunk, and he spent a lot of time kind of going around, and I would kind of be on his coattails, sometimes literally kind of going through this world, and I realized, wait a minute, this is a fascinating story about two people, two very different people, going into this world, meeting these amazing people, seeing these amazing things, and even along the way having a documentarian come along, Bird McDonald, and actually start making a documentary as well. So we wrote him into the book as he started writing about us and filming us. And it, for us, it became just a very much a personal journey of these two very different people trying to make sense of what's going on, not only with steampunk, but with what's going on in this time, which I thought was really fun.
When you think of explaining, I want to get back to something you had mentioned earlier about humor and of humor being very much a part of that. Can you give us examples of that?
Well, there's a couple, actually, and this is one that James might be able to talk about, but the one that we saw that was staring at us right in the face, literally when we were writing the book, and we had kind of come up with this in, you know, James and I would get together at these conventions, or we'd, you know, as we were flying all over the world doing this research, we'd kind of get together sometimes in bars, usually at conventions, and chat, and we'd come up with this idea that people really wanted this idea of humor, and that was right about the time that Siri, so Apple's iPhone came out with Siri, and nobody, from a technical standpoint, nobody was talking about what Siri really was. Siri is a voice input, a voice input search application. But nobody was saying what a great voice input search application Siri was. They talked about the jokes, and that's what everybody wanted to talk about. And when people were when Apple started doing their marketing, they started making all their commercials all about Siri being sassy with John Malkovich.
Right.
You know, they're no dummies when it comes to marketing. So we realized there was this thirst for people. But then one of the things even that we started to see is that when people could get a communications technology that was sufficient enough to talk back and forth, they'll use it for humor. I even was just reading recently that the early telegraph boys would use the telegraph to tell jokes.
A friend who's a steampunk maker has built a robot that serves tea and is entirely programmed by a rotary dial phone. So speaking of different ways of interfacing with things and humor, I mean, it's that quirkiness and that ability with steampunk, you know, it can carry over into the technologies, as Brian's saying, that we use every day and should, and that's some of the broader insight. But the idea of building a huge robot that operates and serves tea on rotary dial, or a device it's a clock, but this is one of the clocks Cory Doctorow has in his office, where the second hand flicks with a little feather and makes a little flip noise. It's very I can't do it. Brian can kind of imitate it. And it was funny seeing him try to write about trying to imitate the noise of Cory Doctorow imitating this clock. But the fact of the matter is, these things are whimsical, and they don't take themselves too seriously. And I think there's a sense among a lot of people that we take ourselves, particularly when it comes to our technology, a heck of a lot too seriously.
Way too seriously. I mean, and that's, I think, the letdown for me is, being a technologist and a technological futurist, we have all this computational power, all this amazing intelligence, and our smartphones still can't make us laugh.
Right.
You know, that to me is a failure. That's a failure of technology and a failure of our imagination. And that was the thing that one of the things that I saw in steampunk was that imagination, as James said, that whimsy, and embracing the fact that, come on, people, humans are funny. Let's be funny, and let's allow our technology and expect our technology to be funny.
The name of the book is Vintage Tomorrows, a historian and a futurist journey through steampunk into the future of technology. James Carrot and Brian David Johnson are the authors. It is published by Maker Media. Gentlemen, I thank you very much for being with us and sharing your expertise. Best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I enjoyed it. Coming up next, we will have more Roundtable. You're listening on WAMC.